move the next case. We're done. We move the next case of the morning. The George Novak versus James Nicholson.
May it please the court.
Bridge.
I'm Tim Bridge, and I represent the appellant George Novak. As this court is aware, this is a claim arising under the Rehabilitation Act in Title VII, in which Novak claims the VA failed to reasonably accommodate his disability, retaliated against him, and affected his constructive discharge from federal service. In this case, the trial court granted summary judgment in favor of the VA on the grounds that Novak failed to identify a vacancy for which he was qualified.
Mr. Bridge, looking at the trial judge's written order and then even the one-page judgment, I don't find any breath of comment about the retaliation claim, and then there's just about six lines on the constructive discharge. Are you satisfied that the judge really finished up with this case?
No, I'm not, Your Honor. In my brief, I do come to the same conclusion. Not one scintilla of analysis on the retaliation claim exists.
So is this just a bad opinion where he really does dispose of the entire case and thus we have a final judgment in appellate jurisdiction, or is this... Is there any reason to think that there's anything of this case still going on in the district court?
There is nothing in the district court going on, but indeed it is half an opinion. Simply.
So there's just no... We don't really know why the judge found nothing to say about the retaliation
claim. Well, I think we do.
I
would add this, Judge. I think we do to the extent that the trial court indicated in the opinion that because it found no proof of a permanent job by Mr. Novak, it felt no obligation to address the rest of the case.
Well, it said that's what he says about the constructive discharge. Okay, that's under the heading constructive discharge. There isn't even a heading about retaliation, and I'm not sure. I mean, certainly this is de novo review. I'll take it from the other side. If we're all satisfied that there's nothing happening in the district court entered a final judgment. Here it is on appeal. A ruling on summary judgment, as you well know, is subject to de novo review, and we can look at it anyway.
That is the case.
Okay.
Three things the trial court did, which were very favorable in this case, which has surprised me. First of which is the court held that the plaintiff had provided significant evidence to show the physiological impairment, in this case, a hip revision and a hip replacement, did present a triable question of fact as to threshold meeting of the Disability Act, which is a very difficult burden. Secondly, the trial court also held that the disability that Novak suffered precluded him from performing the essential duties of his position. In this case, he was an industrial equipment mechanic. Thirdly, the court also concluded that reassignment to another position in the VA was a viable accommodation in this case. So the court, this is not a case that comes before you where we didn't meet our burden with respect to the threshold issues of meeting the Rehabilitation Act.
But what the judge finds, and if I think of cases like the Gile case and others, there are a couple of principles. One of them is employers are not required to create new positions that don't exist. Another principle is that employers are not required to take what's intended to be a temporary position that they use, say, for people who are doing rehabilitation and make those permanent. And there is some burden on the person who wishes to change jobs to find out what jobs are there. You know, he's got to look at the bulletin board or go to the Human Resources Department or somehow apply for something that he knows is an open position. And I think that's where the judge said you didn't come forward with any evidence to show you could meet those burdens.
I think the court's view of partial jobs and no requirement to create jobs is, in fact, an accurate statement of the law of ADA and review. In this case, however, Your Honor, and I think you also agree if you look at this opinion, the court completely ignored the fact that the plaintiff, Novak, did find a job, and a permanent job.
Is that a job at the same pay level?
No.
Was he willing to take a demotion in effect?
It was, in fact, that it would constitute a demotion or a reduction in his grade.
Because I maybe wrongfully got the impression that if he took a lower pay grade, he would have a lower retirement level, and the early retirement might be his only alternative.
He would indeed have a lower retirement. They use the last 3 years typically to compute that. But, yes, he had a job that was a supply clerk job. And in this case, Mr. Novak held that position for 6 months.
We're talking about his job for Mr. Hubert?
That's correct. Okay. And then nowhere in the opinion does the court deal with Mr. Hubert's testimony, which is, I think, critical in this case.
Is that a job that somebody else had to do when he left?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Was that a job made for him, or was that a job somebody else had to do when he left?
In fact, I can't answer that. In fact, it was a full-time job he held for 6 months, and Mr. Hubert states under oath, I would have made him permanent, no question about it, but I was never given that opportunity, says Mr. Hubert.
But I thought he was also asked, implying at least an answer to Judge Mannion's question, that you know, how would you go about converting this job into a permanent position? He says, I'm not sure of all the details that go along with that. So it sounds like he wasn't the person with the authority to create or to designate, I you know, don't want to use the wrong word here, but to make that a permanent job. So it sounds like it was an interim accommodation for him.
It started out as an interim accommodation indeed, like the other ones. He had several, one as an operator of an elevator, so forth. This job, however, became different in that Mr. Hubert indicated to him, I need your services as a supply clerk permanently.
But is now, that good enough to show that the VA itself was willing, in a sense, to abide by Mr. Hubert's judgment that this slot needed to be created?
No. In fact, what the client does, the plaintiff goes to his boss, Mr. Pridlitas, and says, I have found that magic job. I have found a chief of a service, and Mr. Hubert is a chief of that service, who said, I can become permanent. It is now incumbent upon you, Mr. Pridlitas, to file the paperwork with HR, meet with Mr. Hubert, and effect that reassignment. At that juncture, that very juncture, is where Mr. Pridlitas repeatedly, and in the retaliation context it's developed, said, there's no job that I'm going to meet for you with any supervisor. You, as far as I'm concerned, have only one option, and that's retirement. Get out of the service. I will not even go as far as to meet with a service chief that says, I have a full-time position for you.
Well, what the supervisor says isn't nice, but it sounds like there actually isn't a job right now. And so in a sense, your theory has to be that in order to comply with the accommodation requirements, there was a duty to at least send it up the chain to see if they would create the job.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And in fact, there's no undue hardship on anybody to do that.
Even though they might have said no in the end. They might have said, gee, budgetary times are tight or anything like that.
It could have happened, but I know this. When a service chief, as opposed to some other individual, says, I can put you permanently, you're an excellent guy, and I want you, that's all the steam you need to do the ministerial duties that yet need to occur. The agency stopped at that point, and Mr. Pridlitas repeatedly told him, nothing for you here. Now, I can be more specific. In Chapter 27 of the Statement of Material Facts, and I quote, Ralph Hubert, Chief of the Materials Service, testified plaintiff worked in inventories, data entry, barcodes, scanning, physical inventories when he was assigned to the Material Management Service. Hubert testified plaintiff was an excellent worker. He was more than willing to employ plaintiff in the position on a permanent basis if given the opportunity. Now, the defendant admits those statements of fact. There's no question. Now, the trial court's error in this case really deals not only with failing to see that integral part of let's just do these ministerial things and get him this job, but it goes a step further and says, I, the trial court, will not deal with the interactive process or your failure, the agency's failure, to meet that process because you didn't identify a vacant position. So the court says that excuses me and this court from even looking at the interactive process. And really, I think that's the cart before the horse analysis. It is that interactive process which is designed to find the job. In other words, on February 11, 2002, I write a letter on behalf of my client and say, let's do some things here that are minimal and we think required under the Act. Just disclose your available positions. In other words, it's like being in a card game and trying to guess where the jobs are. When we ask for the mere disclosure of the jobs, it's denied.
Okay, thanks. Your time's run out. So
sorry, Your Honor. Thank you very kindly.
Ben. Mr. Brooks?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel? I wanted to address Judge Wood's question first regarding the retaliation claim. First of all, with respect to Novak's argument that the court did not address the retaliation claim, that argument was made for the first time in his reply brief. He never made that in his opening brief, and as such, it's waived. The next question that Judge Wood raised was, why didn't the district court address the retaliation claim in its opinion? And I should have pointed this out in my brief. I didn't. I'll point it out here. If you look back to Novak's briefs on summary judgment, you will not find any substantive argument regarding his retaliation claim. The words mentioned, but there is no argument, factual or legal, in support of that claim. So as such, I raised in my summary judgment response that he had waived the retaliation claim because he didn't support it before the district court. And if you go to the merits of the retaliation claim in any event, this court does have de novo review, as Judge Wood commented, and as such, it can take a look at those materials and see that there is no evidence of any similarly situated person, and that would be required in order for Mr. Novak to sustain a retaliation claim. So on the merits, that claim is out as well. In this appeal, his best argument that he provided evidence of an open position is this evidence regarding Hubert's testimony. First of all, I would point out that Hubert testified, sure, he'd employ plaintiff in the position on a permanent basis if he was given the opportunity to do so. By definition, that means he didn't have the opportunity to do so, which would indicate to me there is no open position. And there is no evidence in the record at all that this was a vacant position. And there could have been evidence in the record. We had a full period of discovery in this case. Novak could have asked for vacancy announcements or promotion announcements. We don't have any of those in this case. On top of that, we have Novak's own testimony, as the court pointed out, that he looked for positions. He looked on that bulletin board to see if there was anything open, and he never found any that was consistent with his physical limitations and his own personal qualifications.
Was it your understanding he was willing to take a demotion in order to get some kind of a job?
Your Honor, that's his position in this litigation. However, as I've pointed out, he testified that the day he was reassigned to a temporary position doing clerical work in the engineering service after he submitted a note that from Dr. Poprosky that Novak needed to return to light duty for about 2 months. Just after he started working in that temporary clerical position, he testified in his EEO investigation, and he testified that he did not want a position other than the mechanic position, and I'll quote, because there's nothing else I could do besides mechanic work, and by putting me in another position, they would have to put me into a lower wage grade, which would put a burden on me. Now, opposing counsel is going to may say that statement of fact, which was statement of fact 42, was denied by him, but his denial did not meet the substance of the assertion in any way, shape, or form. And therefore, it's admitted for purposes of summary judgment. In addition, just before he started the clerical position, Novak testified, and again in his EEO investigation, that he planned to retire in 2002. And timing's crucial in this case.
Does the record show how old a person or birth date of Mr. Novak?
It's interesting you raise that. I looked for that this morning. I thought, how old is Mr. Novak? And I didn't find anything that gives his age in the record.
Because there's a brief mention, I think, in his brief that the original shoulder problem dated all the way back to 1964. That's on page 1 of his brief, since leaving the military in 1964, which is only, I mean, it's slightly pertinent to whether looking at retirement in 2001 or so is, you know, how early is it, I guess. He's already in the military in 1964. He must be at least 18.
As far as I know, Your Honor, he was eligible for retirement both by age and years of service.
Mm-hmm. He started with the VA later, didn't he?
Pardon me?
When did he start with the VA?
I believe in 1979, although I'd have to go check that.
He went in with a 30% disability, right?
That's correct, a service-connected disability.
The VA does hire people affirmatively, don't they? They prefer veterans, and if they're disabled, but it can do the job.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Absolutely, they do. In this case, Novak simply did not provide the type of evidence necessary to show that the clerk position was a vacant position. He testified that he didn't want a position other than his industrial equipment mechanic position. At the time these events were occurring, he testified
that. But, you know,
it
sounds, I guess it sounds like from what Mr. Bridge said, that there was an inquiry that Novak made to the HR people about vacant positions that went unanswered. And then kind of when things change over to the litigation context, what you're saying is he doesn't follow up with an interrogatory or, you know, an effort to take the deposition of somebody in that kind of position or in any other way, a renewed effort to get the same information he wasn't able to get earlier.
If you're referring to counsel's letter was directed to the EEO office. Now, he wants to say it was also directed to the director of the hospital, but I believe that's disingenuous. The letter was CC'd to the director of the hospital and to HR. And I believe it's disingenuous to say that, you know, that's the same thing as sending the letter to them saying, hey, I want some action taken on this. In fact, he sent it to EEO and said, I want you to take action on this. EEO responded to him and said, you know what, we're neutrals in this. We can't do this for you. You need to send this to the director of the hospital where Novak works. 3 days after that letter was sent by EEO, Novak applies for retirement. Nothing happens within that 3 days. And then, so he applies for retirement, but the retirement's to be effective in September. Right. So he's got 6 months. In the next six-month period, there's no letter to the director. There's no evidence that there was any request made for an accommodation. So nothing's done. But all that goes to the interactive process. We don't get to the interactive process in this case because there's no evidence that there was a vacant permanent position within Mr. Novak's qualifications, both physical and his knowledge, skills, and abilities in this case. In fact, we don't even have any evidence in the record of what Mr. Novak's knowledge, skills, and abilities were. We don't have his resume. We don't have any qualification statement. And then we don't have any job descriptions whatsoever. So we don't know whether or not he could fulfill the requirements of those jobs or he could perform those jobs. And on top of that, once again, we don't have any evidence that any of the jobs was vacant. And as the court pointed out, there is no requirement that an employer turn a temporary position into a permanent position. And in the circumstances of this case, it would be particularly strange because Mr. Novak, after he's in the clerk position, he's supposed to be in that position for 2 months. Before that 2 months ends, he comes in with a doctor, a note from his doctor saying he and his doctor have discussed it, and he wants to retire. So he's made his decision. He's going to go ahead and retire. So it would be particularly strange for the VA to be looking for a position for him at that point. He's told us he's going to retire. And then he subsequently follows that up and puts in for the retirement. With respect to the constructive discharge claim, there was some comment by the court about the analysis in the district court's opinion. The constructive discharge claim really is a kind of tangential to the failure to accommodate claim. It really is the result of Novak's allegation that the VA failed to accommodate him. Once the failure to accommodate claim fell, the constructive discharge claim fell.
So you don't see it as related in any way to the harassment he was experiencing on the job? I thought he was tying it into that as well.
To the extent he has argued that there was harassment on the job, that harassment doesn't get anywhere close to the level required for a constructive discharge, Your Honor.
And under suitors, yeah.
Okay. Unless there are any further questions, VA asks that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Okay, thanks. Your time's expired, so the case will be taken under advisement. Thanks to both counsel.